From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 4 months ago in the early days of the pandemic. Case numbers were climbing exponentially in April. It still wasn't clear whether you could get the virus from handling your groceries. And that's when a longtime journalist and science writer made a prediction of sorts. Guy Harrison has been writing about science, psychology, and the way we form beliefs for decades. Writing for Psychology Today, Harrison predicted that we were about to be deluged with misinformation, lies about the pandemic, and attacks on science. His advice was to be careful, because sound thinking could literally be the difference between life and death. Harrison wrote, quote, "A human mind is a half-crazed cyclone of irrationality in the best of times, and now we are living in an environment of heightened confusion and anxiety. These are optimal conditions for bad thinking and dangerous beliefs to flourish. In the coming months, an avalanche of pandemic-related fantasies, lies, and medical fraud will swarm the globe. There will be no limit to the absurdity and cruelty of bad information coming. Prepare to think well or prepare to be a victim, because poor thinking skills can cost you time, money, dignity, good health, maybe even your life," end quote. At the time, I was naively thinking that the pandemic would unite us. We would see a non-political existential threat, and we would work together to beat it back and save lives. Harrison saw things much more clearly. He wrote, quote, "Fear makes the subconscious mind lean into lies that come disguised as hope. Desperation sweetens the allure of medical quackery. Neither politicians, editors, journalists, nor well-meaning friends and family members can shield you from all of it. Some of the nonsense and deceit will get through," end quote. He was right, of course. The list is too long to fully account for here, and we're nowhere near the end of this pandemic. Just last month, the most viewed video on Facebook was a group of ostensible doctors claiming that President Trump's beloved hydroxychloroquine was not just a cure for COVID-19, but it could prevent it. A prevention and a cure. If that were true, it would be the kind of news sparking worldwide celebrations. It's obviously not true, or at least obvious enough to me. But for millions, the story of hydroxychloroquine goes something like this. Only President Trump had the wisdom to see its power, and jealous scientists and politicians have been determined to see him fail, so they've hidden its true benefits. Before you mock that idea, consider that someone in your life almost certainly believes that's true. Mockery probably won't help either. And now consider the millions of Americans who have spent months believing that this virus was no big deal, basically a hoax, or going to go away on its own. That's the story of Tony Green, a man from Dallas, Texas, who said he was a proud conservative who took his cues from the White House. Tony hosted a family party in June. No masks, no rules, and everyone who came got the virus. He was hospitalized. 14 people got sick in his family, and today his father-in-law remains on a ventilator and might not survive. Here's what Tony Green says now. Here's him talking to CNN about why he hosted that party.
I was skeptical. Is this just another rebranded flu? They're trying to send panic, crash the economy and things like that. And in all fairness, there's so much misinformation out there. And like you're talking about with the celebrities, people have a certain amount of influence. And whether your audience is, 1,000, 2,000, or 20 to 50 million people, people listen to you and they take what you're saying at face value most of the time. So there was a lot of things that were going on that were causing me to believe misleading information. And I will also add that, it seems like the White House, the communication was really broken down.
So that's Tony Green's story. Like him, there are millions who don't believe that masks can stop the viral spread. And this week in Pennsylvania, a man and a woman brutally assaulted a 17-year-old worker at a Sesame Street theme park because the boy asked them to put masks on. Police said the boy was taken to the hospital and underwent surgery for a broken jaw. How did we get here? And how do we find our way out of it? Guy Harrison says that better thinking can be taught and trained, and it can save lives. He's the author of numerous books, including At Least Know This, Think Before You Like, 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True, and more. He's a journalist and a science writer, and he's back with us now. Guy Harrison, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Evan. It's a pleasure to be on your fine show once again.
Well,
thanks.
I wish you weren't right back in April. I wish I were right. I had this idea that, because this wasn't a political threat, a virus is not political, because this was not going to come through the door in a prism of politics, that we wouldn't bend it to fit politics, that we wouldn't bend it to a culture war. We'd want to protect family members and ourselves. We want it to be over as fast as possible, and then we want to get on with our lives. What did you know that I didn't then?
Well, I mean, that, come on, that's the easiest prediction in the world to make. You'll never go broke betting on humans to be crazy. Okay, that's an easy one. The problem is being a normal, natural, intelligent human comes with a lot of baggage. Okay, this isn't about dumb people. This isn't about, you know, mentally ill people. This is about everybody, all of us, the best of us. We are all prisoners of our minds, and our minds are wonderful. You know, the human brain is spectacular. It's magnificent. It's the most powerful thing in the known universe. It can do anything, you know, infinite creativity, analytical powers like you just can't believe. But it's also this bizarre, medieval, nutty, weird thing that constantly leads us astray. And that's why critical thinking is absolutely crucial for every single one of us. We've always got to be on guard, not against, you know, everybody else out there, but against our own mistakes. You got to second guess every decision you make. You have to be skeptical of everything, especially your most cherished beliefs, especially those claims, those ideas that come to you from others and from outside sources that feel so good. They're just exactly what you want to believe. It makes the world, it just makes the world feel right. You want to believe it. That's when you got to say, wait a minute, switch on the force field of skepticism, analyze, doubt, demand evidence, consider the source. You got to do these basic steps so you can, you know, weed out the nonsense and try your best to get at least close to something, you know, like reality and truth. You're never going to quite get there, but you can always be leaning in that direction, because if you don't do it, I promise you, you will believe nonsense every moment of your life. You know, you got to think like a scientist always, and anyone can do it. Okay. It's not about your innate intelligence. It's not about your formal education. Doesn't matter how many degrees you have. I've met and interviewed many PhDs who are fruitcakes. They believe the most silliest nonsense you can imagine. So one of my most important messages is be a thinker and protect yourself.
So let's talk about how to do that and how to engage with others. But I do want to sort of flag something right out of the gate here. You're also talking, you're not just saying, hey, someone in your life is wrong. Here's how to convince them they're wrong. You're saying learn these skills for yourself. Protect yourself.
If you're on an airplane that's, you know, having difficulties and the air mask dropped down and your child is next to you, put your oxygen mask on first and then save your child. Because otherwise, you're going to die, right? It's that kind of a thing. You've got to take care of yourself first, then everybody else. Okay. But you know, it just, I can't stress it enough. People don't understand. This is not a political thing, really. This is not, you know, I don't want to frame this as a Democrat Republican kind of problem. Like it's all the Republicans. Not at all. I mean, anti-vaccine, you know, hysteria, for example, goes deep into the liberal side of things. So once again, this is not them. This is us, all of us. So be aware of that and understand that you cannot help yourself. Your subconscious mind is going to run toward crazy stuff every day. Your conscious mind has to keep it in check. And instead of defending your crazy hunches and beliefs, which your conscious mind will naturally do, you know, you've got to challenge them. You got to reject them when they just don't make sense. And many times people struggle with this too. Many things don't have a clear-cut answer. Many things are, you know, awkwardly, uncomfortably mysterious. You just have to be ignorant in the moment. Keep searching for the answer, but accept that you can't know everything. So it's not always a case of, well, you can't explain this, therefore it must be an alien spaceship or whatever we're talking about, okay? Always remember that it's intellectually honest to say, I don't know, when you don't know.
So I wanted to also go back to something you said right near the beginning here, that some people will use to justify resistance to perhaps science or evolving science. Because there's a couple of points I think that are really, really key here. First of all, as we have found out throughout this pandemic, Guy, we've seen science happening a little bit more in the light. And by that I mean, you know, we often in the public that, who are not involved in the conducting of science, we see more end results, or at least close to end results. Science never really has an end result. I mean, it's always sort of learning and evolving and modifying. But
right.
we see something closer to an end result as opposed to, you know, the publication of things that are not peer-reviewed yet, or, you know, something that's much more beginning stages. Well, now we're starting to see what happens when the public sees the process of science, and instead of saying, oh, that's cool, people poke holes in it, you know, they challenge each other, they revise where they're wrong, they admit failure. What we've seen is at least some subset of the population taking this opportunity to say, hey, wait a second, that's not what you said a month ago about this, so I guess you're totally not credible at all here. You know, I'm just not going to listen to you at all because
yeah.
turns out scientists don't know anything. We see politicians saying that. Well, if scientists were so smart, how come they said a month ago that we should wash our groceries? Now they're saying we don't have to do that. I guess they didn't know anything at all, right? As opposed to saying, well, no, that's good that they're revising, that's a positive
yeah.
aspect
yeah.
here.
Great.
But I think that's confusing people who are not sort of trained in science, and I probably would have been in that category years ago myself. I probably would have been very prone to thinking, oh, I guess scientists don't know as much as we thought. What do you say to those people
yeah.
who make that argument?
Excellent point, Evan. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I've written about this a lot. That's a big, big, basic problem people have. They just don't understand really what science is and how it works. And so they end up with these misconceptions about it, like you were getting to. They see where scientists will contradict themselves. They'll change their mind, you know, a month later. All of a sudden, this bad thing is a good thing. The good thing is now a bad thing. And they get frustrated about it. They say, well, these scientists don't know what they're doing. But that is the beauty of science right there. That's why it works. Science is a tool, okay? It's for discovering. It's for confirming what's real, what works. And it's the best thing we have for getting at reality and things that actually do something. So you have to understand that it self-corrects. That's the key. The big reason science works so well is that it keeps correcting and moving on, okay? It doesn't just stick like everything's written in stone and we're never going to change no matter what the reality around us says. We're always going to stay right like this. No, not at all. Constant change and improvement, nudging us closer and closer toward what is really going on in this universe. And that is a beautiful thing, but you have to understand, you have to be mature, you have to realize that that means a century ago, a year ago, maybe last week, we all thought, so the whole scientific community agreed on something that now we know is completely wrong. But that's not a condemnation of science. That doesn't make it look bad. That makes it look good. That makes it look good because now the scientific community is saying, hey, we got it wrong. Let's move forward. And that's a beautiful thing. It's not bad. And people constantly criticize science for this. It's just because they miss that simple, basic, important aspect of the scientific method, how it all works.
I would say I have been almost 10 out of 10 impressed with the scientific community and the epidemiology community throughout this pandemic. Not because my expectation is they will be right on everything, but because they have been transparent about what they know and don't know. And they've guided us. I mean, many of the best followers, at least online, that I spend my time reading have been remarkable at telling us what to expect, how to evaluate whether the information's good or not, how to find red flags and to sort of follow that. I think they have done an absolutely remarkable job and have had the chance to save a lot of lives. And yet we are one of the developed countries in the world with the worst rate of deaths per million. We've essentially been the only developed country, though. I mean, I'm sure these things come in different waves, but that hasn't really squashed a full first wave. And some of that seems to come from, as people like Tony Green said, as we heard at the outset here, believing leaders who are giving bad information. And here's the thing I guess I don't get here is I want to get your take on what is the whole hydroxychloroquine thing about here? Why is it that people have an almost religious devotion to a drug therapy that has not been shown to be all that effective with this disease? What is going on there?
Yeah, well, my hunch would be that they were introduced to it by an authority figure that they admire and respect. An authority that would be the President of the United States. He, for whatever reason, I don't know why, but he seemed very excited about this and, you know, actively promoted it, you know, multiple times in press conferences. And it just kind of spread like wildfire there. It's big. A lot of chiropractors on YouTube videos are pushing it. A lot of like health, you know, health, holistic healing type people on YouTube videos are pushing it. So it's kind of taken a, you know, a life of its own, but it's very easy. Anything he, you know, the president of the United States could have come up and said, hey, astrology is the answer. Let's all turn to astrology. And about 30 to 40% of America would have said, yay, you know, let's go Sagittarius. Yay. I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. I don't need to wear a mask or something, because authority figures, you know, and I don't want to politicize this. If a Democratic president had come up and said, you know, this drug or that drug is the ultimate cure, half of America probably would have been, you know, inclined to believe it. Unfortunately, because here we go again with that subconscious human mind I mentioned earlier. We all have a weakness toward authority figures. Every single one of us, doesn't matter who you are. Okay. It's just a human thing. If a guy shows up wearing a fancy hat or hey, remember the video? Remember the video with the bizarre video with the doctors who got up and they, and the one woman that got all the attention because she, you know, apparently also believes in demons being behind,
yep,
you know, all that. But did you notice something immediately? First thing I noticed, they're all wearing white lab coats. You know, they're somewhere outside in this press conference, this staged event, and they're all wearing white lab coats, you know, like they're in the middle of their lab, you know, checking the Petri dishes or something. Those lab coats are a signal. You know, they're signaling us subconsciously, hey, these are scientists, these are doctors, you know, we can trust them. Whatever they say, we're going to give it a little more weight than we would if it was just a bunch of people wearing suits or something, because they've got the external garb, you know, the sanctified clothing that impresses us. So you got to be careful about that, you know, and I think it probably is as simple as that. You know, you could get all crazy with analysis, but Trump pushed a drug. No real scientific confirmation at all that it works for this purpose. And yet it just caught on with millions of people and they're obsessed with it because it came from an authority figure. Simple as that.
Guy Harrison, a journalist and science writer and the author of many books, is our guest for the hour. He wrote back in April for Psychology Today. Essentially, I mean, you'd think that he was a psychic back in April with what he wrote for Psychology Today, because he laid out all of the misinformation campaigns that were going to be coming our way that have all come to pass here. And speaking of,
well, Evan,
speaking of being a psychic, I know what you've done. I think you are a psychic. There are certain people who visited certain malls who do think you're a psychic.
Well yeah. But, hey, 2018, I had a book published, At Least Know This, Essential Science to Enhance Your Life. And in that book, I've got a chapter about rational, evidence-based, possible ends, end of the world scenarios, human extinction. How could it really happen? No made up stuff, but how, you know, an asteroid hits the Earth, nuclear war, these kind of things. And I assessed the danger of those. And one of them was a pandemic. And I talked about how, you know, if we get it's not a matter of if, it's when. This is 2018. And I'm not the only one. I mean, epidemiologists have been talking about this forever. I quote some of them. And I said, you know, it will hit. There will be a really bad pandemic that will come along. And we better hope that it's not too lethal, because if it has a very high mortality rate, we're in big, big trouble, you know, because the way we do air travel and we live in these big cities, it will be an absolute nightmare to cope with it. Now, we're fortunate that COVID-19 is not, you know, as deadly as a virus could be. I mean, we're actually fortunate. This could have been much, much worse. But I wrote about that in 2018, saying that we have to be prepared. We need to make sure we got a handle on this. The public needs to understand how real this threat is. It's inevitable. You know, pandemics happen, especially with the way we're treating the natural world. We guarantee it's going to happen. It's going to be worse, too, in the future. You know, and this is not hysteria. I'm not, you know, doom-mongering anything. But the problems we have with deforestation, the way we're just crushing the biodiversity of this planet, I mean, it is shocking. And it's not just we're losing pretty flowers and pretty trees. I mean, that bugs me alone right there. But there's a real self-interest in this. We have got to treat the environment better, because we are just setting the stage over and over again for these kind of pandemics to emerge and to really slap us down and hurt us bad.
Guy Harrison, our guest. I'll get to your phone calls in a second. And listeners, I would like to hear from you as you think about your own thinking or maybe the frustrations you've had in interacting with friends or family. I know relationships have suffered over this. I mean, I've seen it in my own circles of family members essentially saying, that's it. Like, if you believe X, then I can't, you know, we can't have a relationship. I mean, that stuff's happening. And it's really hard for people to navigate this stuff. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free if you want to call the program. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Guy, does mockery do any good when you're trying to convince somebody that their beliefs are faulty?
Short answer is no, but a little footnote to it. Sometimes you can embarrass someone because our egos are so important to us. We don't want to look stupid. That's a natural human thing. So if enough people do kind of ridicule you and, you know, everybody's laughing at you, there's a good chance you may actually reconsider your position on some things. But I don't recommend it. In my experience and the cognitive scientists I've interviewed and stuff, I don't think that ridiculing someone is the way to go. And the way I've done it in my life is I come as a friend. I come as a helpful fellow human. When somebody's got some nutty belief in their head that could be harmful to them, or maybe it's just wasting their time. And if you care about them, you know, if you care about your fellow humans, the way to do it is you come at them with a helping hand. You know, you're not trying to slap them down. You're trying to offer them a hand up. Because when you do that, suddenly it's not you against him or her. It's the both of you as a team against this crazy belief. And once you kind of frame it that way and you start asking questions, you know, why do you believe this? Why do you reject all this scientific evidence that seems to contradict your belief here? Why? You know, let them explain themselves. Let them teach you their position. Because in doing that, a lot of times the light will go off. You know, certain switches get flipped inside their brain and they start doubting it. And I've done this many times with many people around the world. And you'd be surprised, you know, sometimes it seems frustrating because you have this talk about climate change or human evolution or some contentious subject, you know, and you seem like, oh, you're beating your head against the wall. You know, this person is never going to change. They're just dug in and that's it. And lo and behold, a month later, maybe a year later, you encounter that person or you get an email or a message, text message. You say, hey, you know, I really have rethought everything and now here's where I'm at, you know, and you think, wow, you know, because sometimes, in fact, most of the time, people have to do it for themselves. You're not going to change someone's mind by winning a debate, by arguing them into a corner and forcing them to surrender. You know, that's not really going to happen. What you have to do is just give them tools, encourage them to think for themselves and figure it out on their own. That's the best way to do it. And in my experience, the most productive way. And it's the friendliest way. It's the nicest way. You know, I'm a happy, positive kind of guy. I don't want to spend my life going around yelling at people and arguing with people. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, make the world a little bit better. That's all I'm trying to do. And the way to do that is you be kind, understanding, and nice. And remember, by the way, last thing, and I'll stop this rant, you've got to be humble. As a skeptic, as a scientific thinker, you must be humble. You've got to have a boatload of humility because it could be you. I've stood before people who believe the craziest things and had long discussions with them. And at no point have I ever said, I am a superior life form to this fool before me. No, not at all, because I know, you know, if my life had gone a little bit this way, a little bit that way, I could be standing right in their shoes and believe the same stuff.
So what do you do for yourself then, before I get to phone calls on this, what do you do to guard against your own biases, and how can people train themselves to resist their own biases?
Yeah, well, as far as information coming in, first step, you always consider the source, you know, and a bad or sketchy source doesn't mean it's necessarily wrong, but that's the first thing that should pop in your mind, you know. Are you looking at InfoWars, you know, the conspiracy theory website, or are you reading, you know, a scientific journal, a peer-reviewed article? Those are massive differences between those two things. So consider the source first thing. Read what you want and try to be self-aware to your reaction to it. You know, is this too good to be true? Is this really what I want to be true? And if so, give it extra scrutiny. You know, you got to, and of course, obvious, I mean, you demand evidence. You want good, credible evidence. And like Carl Sagan, the phrase he made popular, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, extraordinary proof before you believe them. So the bigger the claim, the more demanding you must be for evidence. And most important thing, quick tip I would give people is never think you have it all figured out. Your life is a work in progress. You're never going to get there. Okay. You're always going to be learning new things, and you should, hopefully, if you're a good, solid, honest thinker, you should be revising things constantly throughout life. You know, things you believe today, you may have to refine them, alter them a little bit in the future, and that's fine. That means you're living as a thinker.
All right, let me get Roger in Fairport on the phone first with author Guy Harrison. Go ahead, Roger.
Oh, well, thank you for taking my call. I'm just thinking about, you know, consider the source. Well, the people who believe what you consider to be outrageous things are considering the source. They believe their sources, and other people believe, say, scientists. I mean, I happen to be one of the scientist side, and I'm just wondering, like quantum mechanics, do you believe in quantum mechanics? And the question is, the answer is yes. The question is why? Do you think you could possibly understand the mathematics that quantum mechanics is based upon? Of course not. I can't understand anything close to that. So I'm just not sure how we can blame other people for going with something that they can understand, which is complete and utter nonsense to us and which doesn't work, but it works for them.
So yeah, excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up. Because when I say consider the source, I'm suggesting that there are these bad, sketchy sources we should never look at. And then over here, there's all these perfect, always correct sources. Not at all. I don't care. Look, New York Times, you know, any academic journal, all of them are riddled with mistakes. As long as humans do journalism, as long as humans do science, there will be errors everywhere, okay? So when I say consider the source, what I'm encouraging people to do is select for information sources that at least have a better chance of being more consistently right than wrong.
But
so it's kind of like, yeah?
What if I don't trust the intentions of scientists or of people who believe certain things? I just think, well, you know, the liberals are going to believe that because it goes with the policies they want. But that's not the way the truth is. I've seen somebody explain to me why this particular treatment works or why this particular bit of physics is completely wrong. And I know I can't understand it, so therefore I have to trust someone. And these are the people I trust.
If I were having a discussion with somebody who was a believer in many irrational things and hit me with that argument and said, but how can you trust these scientists? I would say, well, hey, I only trust them to a point. They're not my scientists are not a priesthood. I don't look to them for ultimate truth to be correct all the time. They're not infallible. Not at all. It's a good start point. And in a general sense, scientists make their case based on evidence. And there's for many important things, there's this convergence of evidence, sometimes, you know, from many different fields. And when that happens, it's pretty safe that you're in the ballpark for reality and truth. You're getting pretty close to it when everybody agrees. But even then, all knowledge is tentative. You know, in my head, there's some things I really think are true. I mean, 99.99999% confident in their accuracy, truth, reality, got it. But there's always that little door I leave open. I'm ready to say, well, wow, that blows my mind. I never thought that would turn out to be wrong. I'm ready for it. I'll adjust accordingly. I'll, you know, trim the sails and change course. That's how I respond to a real passionate believer in something that's trying to say, well, you can't trust scientists or you can't trust mainstream media and all that. I would agree. I would say, yeah, you're right. I can't trust scientists. I can't trust mainstream media. But certain sources are better than others. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I can trust a lot of scientists. I can trust when scientists attack each other's ideas. They don't attack each other. They attack the ideas to make sure the ideas are sound. And if there's holes in the ideas, then we start to see them all spring a leak. That's the beauty of this process. And during a pandemic, we're going to see some leaks. That doesn't mean that science is incapable of telling us what's going on. In fact, I'll say it again. I am grateful for what scientists, what researchers, what epidemiologists have been doing for us throughout this entire process here. And, you know, we're hopeful that there's going to be an endpoint at some point. Guy Harrison is our guest. Go ahead, Guy. Yep.
Can I, just a quick thing to add there. We got to be careful about saying scientists, you know, because I noticed a mistake many, many, many people make. They will, you know, they want to learn something about the age of the Earth, and they'll cite an engineer, you know, and I'm saying, and so what? Yeah, he's an engineer. I'm sure he can design a great bridge or something, but he's not a geologist, you know. So that's not my go-to source for the age of the Earth. And many people make this mistake. They'll, you know, if I want to know what's going on, try to figure out what's happening with this pandemic, I'm going to an epidemiologist, not a chiropractor, not a general practitioner. That's not to say, you know, other medical professionals don't have anything important or useful to say. Of course, many do. But you've got to understand science is broken up into many, many areas of very specific expertise, and that is crucial. You know, a chemist is not going to be able to tell you really everything you need to know about evolution, you know, or a physical anthropologist is not going to be able to tell you everything you need to know about chemistry, okay? So you got to be careful about just that general term, scientist.
Fair enough. Guy Harrison is a journalist and a science writer and the author of a number of books about how we form our beliefs and how we can train our thinking to be a little sounder, particularly during a time when people are literally dying. And unfortunately, some are admitting, people like Tony Green in Dallas, Texas, been all over the media this week talking about how he and his family believed a lot of the claims that this whole thing was a hoax, that it was no big deal. And a lot of people in his family were badly sick, and he could lose his father-in-law because of it. We're going to take our only break of the hour. We've got more of your feedback to share. If you want to call the program, 844-295-TALK. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, President Trump has repeatedly tweeted about the suburbs lately. He says he's protecting the suburbs, and particularly women in the suburbs, from low-income housing. You can understand why people see race and racism in those tweets. We've asked town supervisors, suburban supervisors, to come on the program to talk about it. We'll do that Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So we're talking about the way we form our beliefs and why people believe the things they believe. Maybe you saw recently John Oliver from HBO tackling conspiracy theories. He had two points that I want to key in on. First, he said, if you want to believe really, really complex conspiracy theories, you ought to think about surprise parties. He said, when's the last time you were involved in a surprise party? Could everyone hold the secret? Probably not. You're asking for a surprise party of a massive scale to hold massive conspiracy secrets for years and years with not a single leak. And he said, if that were doable, we'd have a lot better success rate with surprise parties. I thought that was pretty compelling. He also played a clip that I want to play and get Guy Harrison's take on, of all people, radio host Rush Limbaugh talking about why President Trump likes to peddle conspiracy theories. Limbaugh basically gives away the game here. Let's listen.
When you get to Trump and his conspiracy theories, he does it in a really clever way. Trump never says that he believes these conspiracy theories that he touts. He simply passed them on. And it's his way of jamming them up. It's his way of teasing them. It's his way of getting these conspiracy theories out there. So Trump is just throwing gasoline on a fire here. And he's having fun watching the flames.
Guy Harrison, do you agree? I mean, is that a pretty, I mean, like, you wouldn't expect people to admit that and to do it gleefully because of how harmful that can be. But I don't necessarily know that he's wrong about that.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh comes clean. Wow. Yeah, thing you got to understand about conspiracy theories, that's again, the reason they're so popular, the reason they just won't go away, is it hits to the core of humanity. You know, we anthropologists, some anthropologists have actually studied conspiracy theories, and they've concluded that they go deep into prehistory, because a conspiracy theory represents special knowledge, you know, about other people around you. And it's crucial for staying safe, you know, surviving. Imagine you're an early human, 250,000 years ago in Africa, and somebody comes up and says, hey, that guy over in the next valley, watch out for him. You know, he's going around like spitting in the food and peeing on the crops or something, or whatever. Well, no crops then, but you know what I mean. And, you know, everybody would say, whoa, and they'd start spreading that knowledge around. Watch out for that guy over there, you know, because he's a little sketchy, he's risky. And this thing, we just cannot resist it. It's a key form of information exchange between humans. It's special knowledge, you know. It makes us feel a little more in control, have a little more power. We know something maybe most people don't know. So conspiracy beliefs, theories, they're irresistible to us. And that's why you got to be so careful about them, you know. And it's complicated because conspiracies are real. I mean, you read history, you know, they happen all the time. The assassination of Abraham Lincoln, you know, a big conspiracy. Things happen. And you can't say they're all crazy and impossible, because so many really bizarre ones have turned out to be real. They are real. So like with anything else, you have to analyze them. You have to look for the evidence. And even if you think you got a gut feeling, maybe this is real or true, you got to withhold until somebody proves the case and somebody makes that case with evidence. It makes no sense to believe in them. So be on guard, because I tell you, they're not, people think they're silly, but they're not. They really cause like real problems. I mean, people get so off track. You know, remember the guy, the Pizzagate guy, runs in with a rifle, you know, ready to kill people because he thinks people in the basement of a pizza restaurant have some kind of dungeon with children down there.
And there was basement, by the way. You know, there wasn't even a basement.
Yeah. And the problem is now with social media, you know, I mean, conspiracy theories, they just fly around the world at lightning speed, you know, jumping into the minds of millions of people. So, yeah, we face a really important moment in our history as a species, humankind. We have got to improve our ability to think. We've got to become critical thinkers as fast as we possibly can, because our technology is just driving us nuts like we've never seen, you know, because now a guy like, you know, Alex Jones, famous for pushing so many conspiracy theories. There was a time when an Alex Jones was just the guy at the local bar, sitting at the bar, maybe two or three people listened to all his stories and everything. But now, you know, millions of people hear him, and they spread his stories. So it's a different world. Better be prepared.
Let me get Jim in Irondequoit next. This is line one. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, I'd just like to ask your guest if he's ever read any books on the assassinations of the 60s.
Yeah, JFK. Read a book about that one. Martin Luther King, I have no books, but I've researched it.
You have?
Yeah.
Can you name one author?
Gerald Posner wrote one on JFK.
Oh.
It's pretty good. Yeah, I can't remember the title.
That one was coming. Case Closed is the title. I read it. Is that it? Is that the only one you read?
60s, never read, not books, no. That's the only book I've read on an assassination in the 60s. RFK, Martin Luther King.
I think that's shameful that you casually dismiss subjects so important that you know so little about.
Well, I've read about them. I haven't read actual books on them, but yeah, I mean, those are important events. I mean, I'm a big Martin Luther King Jr. fan. I mean, I'm not dismissing it as unimportant or anything like that. But yeah, what's the point?
You're dismissing
what do you mean?
People that believe. The point is, I think the point is obvious. I'm exposing the fact that you're dismissing things out of hand of great importance, and the people that believe in those things to be conspiracies, without actually knowing those things for yourself.
Hold on, guys.
What have I dismissed?
Wait. Just one second, Jim.
Conspiracy theorist, Jim.
You didn't ask him if he's read about something. You asked if he's read actual full length books. There are millions of long form articles and all kinds of documentaries and everything. I mean, just because he's read one book doesn't mean he doesn't know anything about something.
Oh, I already know that he doesn't know anything, because it's a very easy thing to expose people who say these things, because as someone who has spent a lot of time immersed in those subjects, I have read books on both sides, on every side. And I wish to God they weren't conspiracies. I wish they were simple explanations and lone assassins and on and on. But they aren't. And I know that because I was immersed in those subjects. And it ticks me off to no end when I hear people putting themselves forth as experts and dismiss the people that believe in those conspiracy theories, when in truth, they really don't know that much themselves about the subjects they dismiss.
Okay, well, first of all, we weren't talking about assassinations in the 1960s, and I never dismissed anything about that subject. Second point, I am an advocate of always keeping an open mind. If someone can prove the case that there was a conspiracy to, say, kill Martin Luther King Jr., then I would love to see that case made. I would love to see the evidence and get to the bottom of that. And if possible,
I have an answer for that.
Punish the people who did it. But just because something is possible, just because something seems to make sense, just because something has loose ends or there's certain questions and unexplained aspects of something, that doesn't make it true. But that doesn't mean I'm standing saying it was impossible. Okay, like UFOs, for example. I think there's a really good chance there's intelligent life in this universe beyond the Earth. But I don't believe they're visiting us all the time. Maybe they are. I don't know. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying it definitely cannot happen. But I'm not convinced it is, because no one has produced convincing evidence. Yes, same thing. UFOs, conspiracy theory, make the case. I will join you in believing it.
Can I have a chance to answer this?
Go ahead, Jim.
Please. Okay. People are under this assumption that the truth is unavailable and in the ether, and if someone really had it, they would have come forth by now. Yeah, the truth has been known since 1967. It's in books. It's in the library. It's there for anyone that wishes to access it. That's the grand irony of the world we live in, is anyone can access these things, but it's up to you to take the initiative to do it. And if you don't, do you think the people that did it are going to tell you they did, or are going to make any effort to make it easy for you to know that they did? No.
All right. What are we talking about? JFK? I don't know. What are we talking about?
Well, we can talk about JFK specifically, but I came to understand that the same power structure is behind all of those assassinations. It wasn't just JFK. That's where I started. But ultimately, you do wind up getting into the rest of it, because it's an ongoing systemic thing. It's not something that can just be dismissed and go, "Oh, that's just crazy people needing to believe things or wanting to believe things." And it's just the opposite. Most of the people I know don't want to believe things. I know I don't.
Jim, I hear you, but I have a question, because I think you've indicated in the past that your belief is that 9/11 was an inside job. Is that correct? Okay. How many people do you think have kept that a secret and have done everything that they could for 20 years to make sure that nobody ever found out that 9/11 was an inside job?
Evan, you can go figure it out for yourself. There's plenty of people speaking out. Just because it's not on CNN doesn't mean it's not happening. There's a lawsuit going on in New York City that Jeffrey Berman was holding up, where they're trying to get evidence in front of a grand jury of testimony of 118 first responders to explosions. And the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth is trying to get that in front of a grand jury. And if that happens, it should be front page news. It should have been front page news already.
Jim, I've read about explosions on 9/11. When a plane hits a building and that building is collapsing, other things are going to explode.
No, Evan. That's not what happened.
Okay.
That's not what happened.
I'll listen.
I'm just telling you that I know you will, and like I said in an email, I wouldn't reach out to you if I didn't think you wouldn't listen. So It's not that. It's just when I heard this guest coming on, I knew there was going to be inevitable I'd have to call him because he's going to hit a nerve with me. And when I hear the words conspiracy theorists constantly thrown around in negative ways and then mixed in with, you know, well, we've got to, you know, keep our faculties and our critical thinking. It's doublespeak. It's speaking completely against what we should be doing, which is being critical, being unafraid to be critical. It's a free country, and everyone has a right to their opinion, and it needs to be taken on its merit, not dismissed because it's not popular or because it goes against the grain so much.
I think that last statement, I think everybody agrees with. And, Jim, I've got to let Guy respond, and then we can continue offline. Go ahead, Guy.
Yeah, well, just hopefully a helpful comment is, where do you draw the line? There are so many conspiracy beliefs out there. How do you choose which ones to believe and which ones not to believe? Because they all have somebody making claims. They all have things that are intriguing. They all have things that make you, you know, sit up and go, huh, that's possible. That's why they survive as conspiracy beliefs and gain popularity. So where do you draw the line? You know, and you don't have to be a believer in the conspiracy to kill JFK. You can be someone who's interested in it and open to the possibility, which I am. I would put myself in that category. But like I mentioned this earlier, there's a sort of a gray area that's intellectually honest, meaning that you see that something could possibly happen. It's maybe worth could have happened, and it's worth investigating. But you don't. It's not binary. You don't have to reject it as impossible or be completely on board as a true believer and have no doubts about the fact that it happened. You know, there's this area in the middle, like I mentioned with UFOs. Maybe they are visiting us. Maybe there's aliens here coming every day. But there's no reason to believe it until we see that crashed spaceship and we have real evidence for it.
Yeah, if I could, Guy, it sounds to me like what you're saying is, ask yourself if you are 100% on a belief. And if you are, that probably indicates something almost a little too stringent here. I mean, that's not to say that people can't have some beliefs that are really rock solid, but particularly for really, really big claims, it's one thing to say, hey, I'm open to the idea that the government has concealed evidence about XYZ. It's another to say, I have zero doubt that it happened despite all of the counterclaims, and there's nothing that could change my mind the other way. Fair?
It's like you know, the moon landing hoax conspiracy. You know, Richard Nixon was president during the Apollo moon landings. Now, do we trust everything Nixon said or did? Of course not. You know, very questionable guy when it comes to the truth and lying, right? But just because Nixon was in the White House then, just because it might have been a way to make Russia look bad, that doesn't prove that we never landed on the moon. You know, 6 lunar landings, 12 astronauts walked on the moon. We have so much evidence for it, so little against it, that it just doesn't make sense to believe one and not accept the other.
All right, I'm going to try to move quickly here. Keith, next on the phone. Go ahead, Keith, keep it tight.
I have an interesting show, but the older I get, the more I realize that people aren't very smart, and they're easily led, and we need more cynicism. But one thing with conspiracy, it depends on the event, depends on how big the conspiracy is. Moon landing, JFK, conspiracies behind Robert Kennedy getting shot, not many, because everybody firsthand witnessed it. He said why he did it. How many conspiracies are there about Ronald Reagan being shot by John Hinckley? Basically none, because that event turned into a non-event. Reagan survived. Beirut blowing up. Immediately the president goes on and says there was a bombing. But then everybody comes out and says, no, they had thousands of tons of ammonium nitrate stored into it. The conspiracies all just went up in smoke. You had mentioned about cynicism before. You did a show on space travel, UFOs. Other than the physics of traveling that fast, you know, people are cynics. I want to see proof. But how many people do you know believe a man built a boat and put two of each species on it? I'll bet you a lot.
Keith, okay, so first of all, thanks for the phone call. It's a bridge too far for me to say that people aren't very smart. I mean, the previous caller, Jim, who I've gotten to know a little bit, he's a very smart guy. And Guy is not saying the people who believe conspiracy, they're not smart. That's an important distinction.
They actually, the real passionate ones tend to be a little smarter than average, because they go so deep with the motivated reasoning. You know, they they really build up these amazing cases. The problem is they tend to be lopsided. They tend to ignore a lot and focus on a lot, that supports the case. But yeah, a typical really hardcore conspiracy believer is not dumb.
Okay, so in our last 80 seconds or so, right now, we do have a president, to Keith's point. We see an explosion in Beirut. What I would hope any leader would say is, that is a horrific tragedy. Let's wait to get evidence. Instead, he's stoking fears and claims of a terrorist attack. His defense secretary says, nah, the evidence doesn't say so. And the defense secretary is basically told, walk it back the next day. How concerned are you about the quality of the training of our thinking and what it means when we are sort of religiously looking to political leaders to guide our thinking instead of evaluating evidence on our own?
Yeah, well, we live in an era where it's on you. That'd be my message to your audience right now. It's up to you. You better take care of yourself. Police your own brain. Because, listen, social media, Trump with his looseness with the facts, you know, you've got to take care of your own house. You got to put it in order and keep it safe. So when information comes to you, social media, you've got to be the editor. OK, there's no newspaper editor protecting you anymore, keeping all the crazy stories out of the paper or whatever. It's on you. OK, you can't trust politicians. You never could. But I mean, it's worse now than ever. So you've got to be your own fortress. You've got to really be tough with the information. You've got to weed out the garbage and only let in the stuff that really makes the best case for being true. So it's a personal, I think most Americans can agree, personal responsibility is a beautiful thing. Well, you need it today.
Guy Harrison has written books on how we form our beliefs. Where are people going to find your work, Guy?
Oh, everywhere. All independent bookstores, I love them. And online, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere. Anywhere books are sold.
Easily consumable books about how we think. One book even called Think. And I think a very important set of ideas during this pandemic and beyond. I'll say it again. I wish you weren't right back in April, but I am appreciative of your time, and thanks for making the time for the program, Guy.
I love being on. Thank you so much for having me, Evan.
You got it. I'm a science writer, author, really smart thinker, and an interesting guy. Guy Harrison joining us. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.